Good afternoon, good morning, or whatever we want to call this. This is the Gordy and Jim Hour, or the Jim and Gordy Hour, however you prefer it. The date is August 5th, 2015. Say hello to the people, Jim.
Hello, folks. We're good to be back. We haven't been on vacation, but it's been a very busy summer, hasn't it, Gordon?
It certainly has. For those of you who are unaware, we've reformatted Veterans Today. Some of it's been because there has been a massive meltdown in the mainstream media. And it's, one of the things I covered in a NEO, that's New Eastern Outlook article today, but we're getting hoax after hoax being published in the, particularly the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, lesser extent New York Times, Huffington Post also, and total and absolute hoaxes. We're also getting censored stories, and that's where there are major stories that come out, and they're totally censored, plus a general unreality in the mainstream news. And this is one of the things that where the elimination of some things at VT were absolutely necessary, because we've been forced to provide, and this is part of our mandate for the military and intelligence community, we've been forced to, let's say, produce reliable news in a manner where people can refer their betters to Veterans Today and be less likely to find a picture of a two-headed Martian boy on the front page. Not that we miss Mr. Fetzer all that much for other reasons either, but and to that extent, we've gotten a number of kudos for what we do, but in the process, we've taken on a position where we are supplying what we feel are the mainstream news items of the day that never reach the mainstream news and never would without Veterans Today. So if you come in and if it's up there for a reason, and our editorial policy, we don't create and back every story, but if it is intelligently written or it tells something that needs to be discussed, and in particular our major thrust is foreign policy, we're going to be doing that. Jim, tell the folks about the story we did yesterday on Mr. Putin and his confrontation with the Turkish ambassador, a story that the American media, none of the European media, touched, and is definitely a verified, very solid story.
Well, as our audience probably all knows, we had a four-man VT team go to the Syrian Counterterrorism Conference in Damascus last December. Gordon, Jim Hankey, myself, and Mike Harris was the only delegation we knew of one group of people that large. And we had quite a time, not including coming back, three of us, with food poisoning. But having a group there, and particularly having being able to video some of the highlights that we had, there's no substitution that having to go on the grueling plane trips and getting there and being able to press the flesh and meet some people that you cannot really establish conversations with. It's almost impossible to get them on the phone. You can't do emails. You have to go there and you have to be there. And the long and the short of it is that we were watched very carefully. They were a little suspicious of us because of our very colorful backgrounds that we have. But some bridges were built. And when we came back, Gordon particularly began almost daily communication with the Syrians. And of course, what we were trying to get is to tell them that we needed them to give us very reliable, current information that we could put out to tell their story.
And we'll say that we're only partially successful at that.
Yes.
to an extent, we're getting probably better military information out of Syria than is being produced by any country in the world. Now, Jim works on a daily basis with Ukraine and to a lesser extent with Russia. And it's like beating your head against a wall. You know, we have people over there, and they are so used to lying, you know, which they may have learned from us, but everything in our mainstream news, everything's is totally made up. Some silly stuff. We've got to, let's go into the story that I opened up with Putin. Yesterday morning, Moscow time, Putin invited the Turkish ambassador into the Kremlin, and we'll get into what we think are the reasons behind this. For 2 hours behind closed doors, and then how do you know what was said behind closed doors? And this is what we're talking about in sourcing. Well, for 2 hours, apparently, Putin said these things, and we have two sources, so we know these things were said, that he called Erdogan a dictator, threatened to sever diplomatic ties with Syria until Erdogan agreed to begin attacking ISIS. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Turks have been using their entire air force and bombing the Kurds. Now, the Kurds have a couple of groups. So the PKK is a group that has been politically active inside and active as a, let's say, officially a terrorist organization inside Turkey for some time. 40% of Turkey is Kurdish. The Kurdish minority has been treated very poorly by Turkey for a very long time. Now, let's remind you that Turkey has a history of mistreating minorities. The Armenians would point out to you that starting in 1915, the Turks murdered 1.5 million Armenians. So there's a long history of the Turks not behaving well. We have the Erdogan government. Let's explain a little of that. They had an election on June 9th this year. Erdogan lost. He's still acting like president. Now, in a parliamentary system, if you lose an election and you're unable to form a government by creating a coalition, you resign and there's another election. Well, there's been no new election. Erdogan is out playing cowboy, and as Putin pointed out, as a dictator. More of what Putin had said here. Putin had pointed out that Erdogan has been openly helping, and helping is the understatement of all time, al-Nusra, which we describe as al-Qaeda, the group that's supported by, well, John McCain and his friends, and a number of American military contractors have been working closely with al-Nusra and supplied them starting in March with 2,500 modern TOW missiles. So when the al-Nusra organization, al-Qaeda, moved against the western part of Aleppo and took the city of Idlib, it did so using those American, that was the balance of power, those American weapons which we know were flown in its American Air Force base near the border of Syria, about 70, 80 miles away, maybe a little more. But they were flown into an American base, driven through Turkey, transferred to al-Qaeda, and used against the Syrian government in Damascus with the full aid of the full backing of the GOP, who is working closely. That's, you know, Graham, McCain, Trump, and gang are working closely with al-Qaeda. Let's take it down another level here.
And they add in the number of retired American generals that basically right out there openly going around doing videotapes with the U.S. media almost reporting nothing about them.
Including anybody that's ever been on CNN or Fox, by the way, has been there. Now, there, you know, this has to be inexplicable. Let's finish up on the Putin story. For 2 hours, screaming at an ambassador, and this is not considered something you can do. The term "go to hell," Putin said. Erdogan, and here's what it was called. Tell your petty Hitler or your small Hitler, depending on how you translate this, to go to hell. If he and his gang move into Syria, we're going to arrange a, quote, large or big, translated Stalingrad for him, and teach you Turks a lesson. And then a mention was made, and this is a tough area of translation on it. We're the only people that have a background. I have 4 years of, you know, of bad Russian at Michigan State. But let's see. The last thing is that Syria's sovereignty is defended by Iran, this is what Putin had said, China, and Russia. Now, that's a translating stretch there. It's vital that we're absolutely clear in all the things. And then the last thing he pointed out is that Erdogan's a hypocrite because he's criticizing Sisi, that's the military dictator in Egypt, that Russia is very close to. And pointed out that at the same time, Erdogan is trying to overthrow the elected government in Syria. And as far as it being an elected government, Jim, you were in Syria for the election.
That's right. And, you know, about a 90% majority. And we didn't see anybody being forced to the polls under bayonets. Which is a classic case of like the Roosevelt years. The country's at war. The whole country knows that those attacking it wanted to balkanize it, put the pipeline through the north, break it up into cantons, areas of influence, to basically eliminate Syria as a nation, and then exploit the hell out of the country and bleed it of everything they possibly could. So despite all of their sectorial problems and their issues that they had, all of those failed in comparison to what they knew the West and the Gulf states had planned for them. So out of just self-preservation, everybody had pulled together, and they knew what I learned there, is that it's not just Erdogan. It's not just Assad. It's Assad. They were voting for Assad and the army.
Yes.
Because they had become one in the same. The army had decided to stick with Assad, and Assad was backing them. The Iranians have helped them with training, and they also did something else extremely important. They came in and organized their civil defense, their local reserves. Because what had been happening is the strategy was a 365-degree attack from all sides to keep the Syrian army spread out and putting out fires all over the place. So they would have small units having the station to hold ground all over the country, and they also had to be constantly resupplied. So these created an unlimited number of ambushes opportunities in which one could get supplies. They could always surround and pick off these units. So what the Iranians taught them is that once the army has cleared an area, they can't garrison it with the professional army troops. You have to have local defense people come in that know the area and they know the people very well. And they are now responsible for security. And then the army stays in larger groups. And then they move forward to the next target where they have military superiority. And that's basically what Iran helped them to do. They really set up that whole civilian defense group. And Gordon, when we were driving around there in December, how many checkpoints would you run into over about a 50-kilometer drive? were these civilian defense guys manning?
Oh yeah, they'd be out there with you know, a barrel on fire and you know,
middle of the night. Yep.
Some of them weren't very old, but yeah, every few feet, they knew the Hezbollah people that, well, we were with Hezbollah people. It's, you know, that's right, another story as well. Let's go into a broader look at what's going on. First of all, there's a reason we're talking about Turkey and Syria, because as far as U.S. survival, as far as the geopolitical flow on things, this is ground zero. Now, what is not being reported in the U.S., these are stories that we have confirmed, major stories that are being censored in the U.S. media, that the Saudi foreign minister is scheduled this month to visit Damascus. Now, and we put the story up yesterday, and I think nobody read it, which is fine. There isn't a big market for anything that doesn't involve two-headed boys or Donald Trump, who's a despicable toad, but it's fun to see him running for president. I hope to God none of you are taking this moron seriously, or any of the other GOP candidates, and I mean any of them. The other problem I have, and I would mention this, you know, we have the controlled mainstream media is on Hillary Clinton, and if you hate Hillary Clinton, and many of you do, and I would say most of you do, you hate Hillary Clinton because you were told to hate her by people you hate even more. What am I saying about you? And this is you people out there, you know. And I'm only talking to the dumb people here, because I know I have smart people too. But if you fell into that one, everything you know about Hillary Clinton, she's being investigated by the FBI? No, she's not. That's a phony story. It's a hoax. That she was involved in shipping arms into Libya. No, she hasn't. That's a hoax. But she's being attacked. Now, let's talk about Bernie Sanders a minute. Now, as far as domestic politics go, Bernie Sanders and I are on basically the same page entirely. And it's funny that the people who should be backing Bernie Sanders are and who believe in the things Bernie Sanders talks about are backing Donald Trump. The problem is that Donald Trump's domestic policies are oligarchical, prehistoric, insane. They would turn this country into a dictatorship. They would push millions of Americans into poverty. If anybody would ever open FEMA camps in the U.S. or rule by decree, it would be Donald Trump. He's a dangerous individual. I'm surprised somebody hasn't whacked him, actually. But we don't whack dangerous people. We only whack good people in this country. But that's another story, you know. I think all of you noticed that a very long time ago, that we only kill the people we love. You know, it's how we are. But we have people making decisions about Trump based on tweets, bumper sticker bullshit. this man is a birther, and God help you if any of you are too, but the whole idea is insane. I'd like to take some of you back, if we've got any birthers out there. Take it in 1961. And if I put you on a plane and flew you from Hawaii or California or wherever, 7 or 8 months pregnant, to Kenya, that flight takes, in 1961, that flight would take up to 3 days. Okay? Most of it would be long range on propeller aircraft, although you might get one 707 or DC-8 flight out of the U.S. Pregnant women weren't allowed to fly airplanes then. That's another problem. She would not have been able to receive, especially if flying with an African husband, would not have been able to get into Kenya, most probably. Would never have gotten medical care. And had she had a non-white child, a white woman in Kenya at that time, it would have probably, if not survived, pillow over the face. There is absolutely no proof, and to that extent, you know, of all the people that talk about going there, I actually did. And I sat down with ministerial officials of the Kenyan government, several of them, and discussed what their opinion is of this. And of course, they all quite clearly stated no one had been to Kenya looking for records. Nobody had been there. You know, and that's including talking to the chief of national security. Okay, no one had been there. Everybody had lied. Nobody showed up. Nobody. It took me 2 days to get there. I had to fly out through Dubai and then into Turkey and then to Vienna, and you know, it was fun anyway. I liked doing it, but I had friends to play with, and we have an Indamus team there, and I've got videos up. I bought a lot of really nice meals for people while I was there, but all of this is a hoax. The whole thing is a childish hoax. Like the Jade Helm thing. Childish hoax. We're already pushing into August. The Jade Helm thing. Oh, they blew up the power plants. They did this. They did. No, they didn't. What we do have, though, is we had Jade Helmsters shoot up a military base a couple of days ago. The aficionados of the Texas National Guard, apparently, went a little nuts. And that's being suppressed in the news as well. Anyway, back to the line here with Syria. The U.S. policy still involves having Syria fall. Russian policy, on the other hand, and this is where we talked about Saudi Arabia visiting Syria. The Russians are selling the Saudis, and this is something Jim's been covering, that the Saudis are wasting way too much money on weapons. But the Russians have decided to build a front in the Middle East with Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and Russia. Now, when they talk about it with the Saudis in the room, they leave Iran out of it, but Iran is an ancillary partner. But the Saudis have signed up. The Saudis promised the Russians last week that they were ending their support for ISIS. And they are the primary support of ISIS. That's very, very important that the Saudis changed sides. The Saudis did this because they are pursuing the war in Yemen, which they see as a threat that will tear Saudi Arabia apart. Saudi Arabia is very close to a civil war. Turkey is very close to a civil war. That would leave the only solid nation other than Iran in the entire Middle East, other than Israel, if you want to call that a nation. That's another thing. That's me picking here. As Syria, the only nations that can hold things together, according to Russia, are Saudi Arabia, are Egypt, and Syria. I point out for those of you who don't know that in, I think it's 1965, and somebody can correct this, Egypt and Syria formed one nation, the United Arab Republic, which lasted into the 70s at some point. I think it fell apart after the 73 war. But there is a strong partnership between Syria and Egypt based on their history of strong relationships with Russia, although the U.S. had bought itself in during the Mubarak years. And under Mubarak, Israel had a major stake in running Egypt, much to the dismay of those who were in denial about this. Now, we have other stories which we are not going to cover here about the possibility of Egypt moving into Libya. It's something we're looking at developing. But if Syria falls, if Syria were to fall, which Americans are taught, that's the greatest, Americans are taught they should be dancing in the street. ISIS will take control of Syria and Iraq. The Kurds will be wiped out by both ISIS and Turkey. And the United States will have at least 400,000 men on the ground that can only come in through Saudi Arabia, which is the only way we'll be able to get in, because it'll be just like the Atlantic Wall, D-Day, 1944. We're going to end up refighting World War II in the Middle East because of the insanity of our foreign policy, and to this extent, the unwillingness of Obama to act dictatorially, if it were, using his real prerogative as President of the United States when he needs to. This building consensus, you know, when it's down to Sheldon Adelson and his, you know, and his owned and operated members of Congress, if the American people wanted to cheer about something, it would be the arrest of over 200 members of Congress who have taken money from a criminal and who have turned on the United States. You know, I was talking with Colonel Hankey, Jimmy, my primary advisor, as it were, other than Jim Dean, and this is something, a consensus we came to, and this is within military circles as well, where a strong division exists. We're at a time in American history, if there was a world war, patriotic Americans should hope America loses. Jim Dean, what do you think about that?
You'll need to fill folks in a little more.
Well, look at the U.S. policies in particular. Domestically, we've built a police state, a surveillance state here. Do we want to keep that going? We have an economy based on shipping jobs outside the U.S., artificial currency, certainly lowering the standard of living, although Obama, you know, the hated Obama has brought the markets back, has reduced the deficit significantly. We're operating reasonably well on what is still a total house of cards economy. It's still that. Now, it's being managed well, but it's a house of cards being managed well. It's not a real economy. The idea that everything in the United States has to be built by a prisoner somewhere or an 8-year-old child that's being hit with a cattle prod working 16 hours a day. And if you've got an Apple product, that's where it comes from. If you've been to Walmart, that's where everything you've got there came from. Slave labor. You know, your cat and dog food, you know, is from fish. I don't know if you're aware of this, but the fishing fleets that operate through Asia, the people on the ships are slaves. You know, one of the things here in America, I live in a larger place than Jim does, but if I were living anywhere else in the world, pretty much, I'd have staff here. Now, if you were in, let's say, you know, we won't name which country, let's say the United Arab Emirates, if I were in Dubai, I would have a gardener, I would have a driver who would maintain the cars and the lawnmowers and whatever, and I would have a cook and a maid. And those people would cost me less than my daughter's monthly rent payment, you know, at college. You know, I was talking to some of the people from Bangladesh that were in Dubai, this was last year, about how much they make. $300 a month working 16 hours a day, sleeping in 10 shacks, 10, T-I-N, shacks, you know, 5, 6, 8 to a room. $300 a month. And in some countries, they're making $60 a month. So any of you out there listening to this, that if you don't have a maid who you can seize her passport and have your way with at will, and then your wife can just beat her with a golf club later, goes on all the time. Nation after nation, Philippines, Malaysia, Cambodia, Bangladesh, that millions from these countries, literally millions, are working as slaves in Dubai for, and it, you know, this isn't for the wealthy Arabs. You know, I've got wealthy Arab friends, and they hire their staff from the UK. They've got British butlers and American assistants or whatever. They're fearful of the criticism. But we have societies that are naturally built on slavery. India is a nation built on slavery, for instance. The entire basis for Indian culture is human slavery and debasement. And India is a great country, militarily very powerful. Great people there, although you read things in the paper about the horrible things, the mass rapes, the hangings, the whatever, the riots, the butchery that goes on there. Those stories are not reflective of the Indian people at all. These are wonderful people. This country's full of Indian people, and they're many of the best Americans. It's only because the rest of us have turned into total idiots. Anyway, Jim, I'll let you run for a minute or two on this, but and you're not a gun guy, so it's summer. I'm trying to keep things as light as possible. We haven't done a show in a while, so we needed to cover some material.
Well, we had another new story, which I had to have your help on. We had this funny story come up on Press TV about a large Saudi and UAE tank column being launched out of the Aden, which is the city that they spent several months slowly wresting away from the hands of the Houthis. And they were heading out into the countryside, heading north to one of the biggest bases in the country, an Air Force base, which the Houthis controlled. And I think the Saudis wanted as a Air Force resupply base because it's away from the city with a lot of open land around it. So you can spot mortar teams and defend it a little easier than you can being near a large population center. So they had this very unusual video. It was only 45 seconds of this very long tank column, almost as far as the eye could see, because it curved a little bit to the left. And they had a car, shooting out the front window, kind of passing them on the left slowly, so you could go by it. And after it had driven a little while, I realized it was just an endless line of tanks. And there were none of the normal supply vehicles that you would find interspersed in between tank companies or tank platoons, because they all have to carry their fuel, their ammo resupplies close to them. All the logistics of that is a platoon of tanks has a one vehicle that's in charge of resupplying and maintenance, and that's generally a good idea when you're moving.
Well, let me jump in for a minute here. We started out with a major error first. Both Russia Today and Press TV identified these tanks as American M1 tanks from Saudi Arabia. Now, what a lot of you don't know is that the United States keeps a force of American-owned tanks inside Saudi Arabia. And that number of M1 tanks that are stored, that belong to the U.S., is over 500. Many of the tanks that we had in Europe that we pulled out went to Saudi Arabia. We've used them a couple of times for things. but they're in storage there, and there's this concern. The Saudis have a lot of their own. The problem is these tanks weren't M1s. They were French Leclercs, a much smaller tank than the M1, with quite a bit less gun on it, but,
yeah,
you know, and ones that need a lot of fixing, by the way. The French Leclerc is, and it's not a bad tank, but it's about 1/20th as reliable as an American M1. But these were clearly identified as the smaller French tank, and these two news organizations, I mean, what were they thinking? There's this one. And then I have a sort of private comment on Press TV, and I've had issues with them. And we'll have those issues in person here in a bit. But this is an important story, whether real or not, it's an important story. Now, I can tell you that RT showed the battle at the airbase today and showed Russian T-72 tanks being used by the pro-Saudi forces, and not M1 Abrams or the French Leclercs. And let me point out that the Saudis don't have any French Leclerc tanks. The UAE does. Now that's relatively important. My Press TV issue is that this is a vital story being censored in the US entirely. And you know, we're talking about, you know, the information that Jim and I really get, and this is Ansarallah, which is the group in of the Houthis, you know, that are fighting against the Saudis. We know them. They know us. And we get information from them almost invariably grossly inaccurate. But, you know, we are in contact. We have people there. But this need for people, you know, if you want to win, and this is what, you know, VT is winning as far as power goes, because we've simply chosen. There was a choice. You can pander to people, tell people what they want, or simply give people the closest thing to the truth you can. And you want to see how this is done? Go through the Putin article in Warzone, and it'll show you how that's done. My criticism of Press TV is Press TV had this vital footage, and more vital footage than anyone else had. They had 6 minutes of it. And when they presented it, instead of getting a military expert there, and they certainly had me available, or Hanke, or others, you know, they could have gotten Gene Khrushchev or any of our guys. They got a guy wearing a pink hat and funny T-shirt from Code Pink, is whatever, an unqualified activist with no military background. It's like they couldn't find anyone else at all. And the presenter that did the show is, you know, I've worked with him many, many times. But they burned up the footage. They burned up the show by mixing the video of this goofball rambling on in the background while a very qualified presenter is trying to make some sense out of it. Because it's important to Press TV that they not have anyone independent or qualified on Press TV, because they want to censor and tightly control, when that is the worst thing a news organization can do. That's the worst thing a nation can do. You know, in the U.S., you know, it's been fairly easy for the U.S. to feed the American people total crap, you know, forever. It didn't used to be this way. If you go back to the years of Watergate, you know, you could get pretty straight talk out of Walter Cronkite, at least, you know, out of CBS News. Those days have not only been gone so long, the American people get almost nothing at all. You know, I do a news scan starting very early in the morning, sometimes 5 in the morning, and I do the major news sites, and I do, you know, the Russian sites, certainly Iraq, Syria, the Kurds, Beirut, Egypt. I go through, you know, the German papers, the French, the American news, and not only do I find almost no content, you can go into the Telegraph, the Guardian, the Daily Mail in the UK, and run in their online edition, I can run down 5 feet and not get past celebrity news or football scores. They have absolutely, those publications, no daily reporting on world news. None. Nothing. All they have is basically tabloid light crap. And here, the U.S., all of the Murdoch publications, that's Fox News, the Wall Street Journal, is a slightly dressed up tabloid. The difference between it and the New York Post is very little. The Wall Street Journal continually, this is where we had this story. Let's go to the NEO story that came out today about President Obama saying that he was going to start bombing Syria to defend the 56 Americans that took us 2 years to train. 56 American trained, let's see, what do we want to call them? Moderate jihadists that are there to fight against ISIS. Well, within, and we don't know if they were kidnapped out of Turkey or Syria, because we're not sure they were ever taken across the border. I've seen no evidence of that at all. It's quite possible that Al-Qaeda, that's the or Al-Nusra, the John McCain-backed group, went to the American training facility outside of Hatay in Turkey and kidnapped the fighters the U.S. was training. In retaliation, starting June 29th, President Obama ordered U.S. military attacks on Al-Nusra. Now, here's the funny thing about that. We've been bombing. How long have we been bombing there? Has it been years yet or what?
Well, it's been a good almost a year, and well, we're in the thousands. And of course, they've admitted that ISIS has really not been degraded. They're as strong now as they were when we started.
Well, based on the understanding we had in the bombing program, this new bombing here of al-Nusra, we could have and should have always been bombing them. That's al-Qaeda. I mean, they're supposed to be bad. Now, I could tell you that. Were you to say, well, we like al-Qaeda now, apparently, because John McCain certainly, well, when he met with al-Nusra, he also met with al-Baghdadi, and we have the photos of that meeting as well. We have video from that meeting showing him meeting with the founder of ISIS. But that's, it's one of those minor things. But when we bombed al-Nusra, we indicated that as a change of policy. The rest of us thought we were bombing them all along, but we weren't, because they were such good friends. Al-Qaeda was such good friends of Erdogan. And then that's in southeastern Turkey, let's say within the areas bordered on Syria, and southwestern or south central. In southeastern Turkey, the areas that border on Iraq or the Kurdish regional government, the Turks have been moving ISIS fighters in and out continually. And Turkey admitted that it has transshipping 26,000 ISIS fighters across Turkey into both Syria and Iraq. 26,000 they admit to. Today, in a meeting with Secretary of State Kerry, Turkey admitted that in all of their airstrikes thus far, they have never attacked an ISIS target. They have only been bombing the Kurds. And they promised Kerry today, and we believe based on the ultimatum the Russians gave Turkey yesterday, that they are finally going to, at some time in the future, actually attack people they claim are their enemies. One of the things, this going back for a second here, why Turkey is so vital right now. Remember, we've got Erdogan, who's acting as a dictator. He has no government. He has no authority. He's just at war. Well, the primary event here a couple of weeks ago in the little town of Surak, a suicide bomber killed 32 people. And Erdogan announced that that was an ISIS attack. We believe that Erdogan staged that attack. All 32 victims were from the HDP party. They were Kurds, political enemies of Erdogan. They were the people who just defeated him in an election, and he killed 32 of them, blamed it on someone else, and then started bombing the people that were killed, the victims. He went after the YPG. That's a critical point. We talk about it, Turkey's bombing campaign. The PKK has been around since the 1960s. It has been the opposition against dictatorial rule against the Kurds inside Turkey for a long time. And the PKK is not entirely a beloved group with other Kurds. Many Kurds don't back the PKK. And when Turkey, you know, wipes out some of them, they've learned it's easier to keep your mouth shut. And this is Barzani, the head of the Kurdish regional government in Iraq, has been notoriously quiet about this Turkish bombing campaign. Well, this bombing campaign is not just after the PKK, but it has wiped out villages as well. These are civilians. And the Turkish bombing campaign has been actively against another group called the YPG. The YPG are Syrian Kurds backed by the United States. These are the people that the U.S. gave air support for that recaptured Kobani. Turkey is now bombing Kobani. They're bombing the U.S. allies there on behalf of ISIS. And they are attempting to aid ISIS in retaking Kobani. And the ISIS forces are being held safely inside Turkey while Turkey bombs the U.S.-backed YPG militia in order to put ISIS back in Kobani and to block the Syrian army's campaign that is currently isolating the major military headquarters along the Euphrates River at Raqqa. And there's a... The other issue, of course, we can go into is that Syria is winning the war. We get solid news out of Syria every day. We knew that in March, Syria lost much of Idlib. We know they've taken much of it back and way more around the country. They're slaughtering ISIS. Now we know that Palmyra fell in May, but we know the Syrian army is sitting just outside of Palmyra and has blocked the retreat of ISIS from Palmyra. We also know in the south area south of Damascus, in Dara, and in the Yarmouk camp, which you can explain more about, Jim, that both ISIS and al-Nusra have asked the Syrian government for free passage to withdraw their troops who are under siege by the Syrian army and to take them back to Jordan, where they come from.
Right, so they can just rest and resupply and then be shipped out somewhere else.
Yeah, and so
the other key thing going on here, which Erdogan seems to want to stop, is the Kurds have been doing a very good job of, on the northern flank, of cutting off the supply routes over the Turkish border. And that was in preparation, that was helping the Syrian army get ready to make a big push on these areas, because as you know, you want to degrade a person's supply situation, because they have to have trucks. How often do those trucks have to flow to keep food, fuel, ammunition, to keep those operations going for the ISIL folks? Gordon.
Well, one of the key things about ISIL and where they've been, and they're a well-run organization with the Saudi, Israeli, and other help that they get, but you have to look on Syria in particular, and this is where we're going to look at mostly because we get the best information out of Syria, although we have teams in Iraq right now that arrived last week. Syria is a desert nation. But in the east of Syria, the Euphrates River comes up out of Iraq, and along the Euphrates, we have communities where they have a tremendous amount of agricultural, irrigation-driven agricultural lands. And these are allowing ISIS to stay supplied and fed because they are living off the local population. ISIS is very good about taking total control. Now, this is where they're intelligent. Let's sort of explain this, and Syrian friends won't want to hear this. But Syria, the Assad government is largely an oligarchy as well, not entirely unlike pretty much everywhere else. And however wonderful a person Assad is, and we have people we like within the government, there are ministers that I particularly enjoy. But there are people around Assad, and there are a wealthy elite that bleed the Syrian people to death. You know, it's 130 degrees in Damascus today, and many of the people in the city haven't had water and electricity for weeks, including, we have a bureau there who head into a hotel lobby and sit on a couch all day to have Wi-Fi and air conditioning, because we're all old people here, because they have, they're living under brutal conditions, while others in Syria are living very, very well. Now, within Syria, Damascus is a very beautiful city. It's functioning surprisingly well. There's fighting north of Damascus, and the Syrian army, along with Hezbollah, have made tremendous inroads. This issue about the Yarmouk camp, this was a huge Palestinian camp with 300,000 people in it at one time. Well, ISIS moved in there with al-Nusra and others months ago. While there were only 10, 11,000 refugees left in the camp, well, kind of the point being is that as much as people may talk about loving the Palestinian people, they just as soon leave them in refugee camps. Not let them go anywhere else. You can go down and find a, and you and I have seen this, you can load a car up with teenage girls and take them where you want. You've met some of those girls, haven't you, Jim?
They had some for translators, and we were in.
They had a table full of them in the restaurant too. And then up and down the halls of the hotel as well. And I believe Franklin Lamb introduced us to several of them, if you remember.
But, yes, yes.
Yes, yes. And what they were, and it's funny, but there's a tremendous willingness to save attractive 16-year-old girls. I don't know what this is, that something just seems to tug at people's heartstrings, where you'll load a car just like you went down a line, and hey, this one's cute, that one's cute, oh, that one's missing a tooth. No, you're gonna starve to death. We might want to get into that a little bit, But there's a huge need to go through these refugees, and select the most attractive females or otherwise, and we won't, belabor that, but you can hear what I'm saying, and I could say multiply what I've said by 10, and you'll be underestimating what's in reality going on. And that Westerners who go into Syria, Iraq, and otherwise are quite often human slave traffickers that are there to live off the local population, ingratiate themselves with corrupt officials. And this is a problem in Iraq, it's a problem in Syria, a problem in... Kurdistan's a little tougher about this stuff. They're a little more protective. And I give them credit for that. Kurdistan's more, by American standards, if you go into Erbil, for instance, if you've got the $500 a night for a hotel, and it will cost you that. You, as an American, you'll be perfectly at home there. And if you wanted to visit a country at war, and still have great meals and a great hotel room and a decent pool and a good rental car and the ability to drive around and speak English to people even better than Dubai. The new economic success story in this world is Kurdistan is Erbil. And you will not see Erbil fall. The U.S. would, that's where the U.S. would draw the line in the sand. But Erbil is, Kurdistan is an American state in the Middle East, more than anywhere else, with people that, you know, what we claim about Israel, that love the United States. The Kurds are the most forgiving people on earth. You know, we were talking a while ago about the U.S. If there was a war and the U.S. lost, it would be the best thing. Because right now, if the U.S. won a war and we had our way, we're back to what, how we were behaving in the Cold War. We support only dictatorships. We have absolutely no common sense at all. How we let Libya be absolutely brutalized. I mean, this is our fault entirely. This could have been turned around. The French and Italians, you know, convinced everyone they had it in hand. And I am, you know, less a fan of Gaddafi than anything else, although one of the few people that actually knew him, you know, understood him and respected him. Little country, only a couple million people. You know, the Libyans in Libya itself, there are only 2.5 million Libyans there. Everyone else is a refugee. There may be 7 million people in the country, but there are almost no Libyans in Libya. That's a country. I mean, you could sort out, hell, that's, you know, barely the city of Detroit. You should be able to sort that out in a weekend. Instead, we've got the smallest scale monstrosity of a several-year-old civil war imaginable. And you don't think that's being done on purpose, you know. And we can describe this going into Africa, the battles that have started in Cameroon right now. And they are monstrosities as well. I'm looking at our time here. I'm wondering how much time we have put into this. We're at, we probably have 10 minutes, you think?
Oh, no, we just got a couple minutes, 1 or 2 minutes left to you know, close out at 58 minutes. It's 1:22 we cranked up.
Oh, good. I'm glad you keep track of things.
I did. I tried to cover a little bit of the show while we get briefed. But we will be back next week, if not sooner, folks. We've got this Obama is going on the offensive against the detractors of the Iran agreement. He had the Jewish groups, 20 heads of 20 major Jewish groups at the White House. And then he's at American University, and he is on the attack. So you can read about that in War Zone. We've got the new articles up, and we will try to stay on this stuff because this is going to be a big battle, not only winning the Iraq agreement and getting it through Congress and whatever, but all those who have fought this. We have to get people angry enough to say we've got to just not leave these people standing to come at us again as soon as they take a rest and find another way to attack us.
Let's predicate this also, that our foreign policy is predicated on Iran was trying to get a bomb. No, they weren't. They didn't have a nuclear program. They weren't making a bomb. All that's bull. And the other one is that the Russians are trying to get all of us. No, they're not. We're making the whole thing up. It's all invented. All of it.
And the best proof of that is Israel never put one shred of proof that they had anything to show that the Iranians had a nuclear weapons program. After 20 years, two decades of claiming that they were only 2 or 1 year away from making the bomb. And media has not savaged them. The Jewish community in the United States has not savaged them for that two-decade-old lie. No, there's been no institutional people that have gone after them. They should basically be be ostracized from any communication whatsoever after what they've inflicted on us for 20 years, all because it served their interest. So there has to be payback, folks, when this is done.
Jim and I are here telling a very lonely truth. We have the facts. We have all of it is on our side here. And, you know, if this idea of, and I'll be talking on Iranian television, in Farsi and Arabic, by the way, translated, but in another hour and a half, discussing the president's speech to the, you know, and explaining it to the Iranian people. But you have a president of the United States, you know, and for whatever reason, if reading the controlled news and the phony alternative news and the Fetzerites and whatever, Alex Jones, that Obama is your enemy. Well, I've explained 100 times the cowardice I'm seeing there. And however, you know, thank heaven Obama is there now, because every Republican candidate would go to war with Russia and Iran simply because they've accepted bribe money from a mobster to do this. Every candidate is there. I don't think anybody's bribing Trump. He's got to be bribing himself. And I'm just wondering if he'd gotten syphilis or something and he'd just become this crazy. But these people are lunatics, absolute lunatics. If you're listening to them and looking at them, they're lunatics. Be more careful where you get your information from. I've got an old Tolkien saying, Lord of the Rings, you know, Pippin and Merry when they were kidnapped in the book The Two Towers, by the way. Never accept meat from orcs, meaning, of course, that orcs eat human flesh. If somebody offers you an orc hot dog, you don't want to take it. But never accept any information off the internet. Never accept it from the mainstream news. And
it's just a starting point. But that's it. We're over the hour, so we'll wrap it up and catch you folks next time we have some time and an interesting hour we think we can put together. But do go to the front page today. We've had a very busy week. We're really on this Turkey and Syria thing. And as Gordon said, if this thing does not get taken care of carefully, this could be a major blow up in the Mideast. The ground is moving under our feet as we speak.